This is Across Divides, a series of stories and experiences from communities across the island of Ireland as they meet shared challenges and consider opportunities for collaboration. Find out more at icommunityhub.org.
My name is Susie Cann, and on today's episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about digital inclusion on the island. I'm going to be joined with some experts in this area because they've been working at trying to bring about digital inclusion, and they come from both Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, and we want to explore the challenges that are there and what opportunities there might be for collaboration. So I'm going to go to our first guest is Stephen Dallas. He is CEO of the Bytes Project, and they have been using youth work and technology to work with vulnerable young people in Northern Ireland for nearly three decades. You're very welcome, Stephen. We also are joined by Steph McKillop, who is the Digital Inclusion Officer at Supporting Communities. Their Go On Northern NI programme has been running for 10 years, and they recently launched a new project to increase digital access in rural communities. We also have with us Tracy, who is a founder of Grow Remote, making remote work local in 144 communities across the Republic of Ireland. You're all very welcome. Stephen, we might start with you because those three decades no doubt have seen massive change in digital inclusion, let alone who all was even aware of that term, what digital poverty might have meant. You know, we didn't know about that three decades ago. We certainly didn't have it in the conversation. And I'd love to hear a bit more about your work in that time.
Absolutely, Susie. And thank you for the invite. I'm always daunted when someone says, you're going first and you'll be interesting, because that's up to the audience. So we'll see how it goes. But Bytes have, as you said, Susie, been in existence for 30 years. And originally it was set up by a group of people from the north who went to Los Angeles to meet a project in Los Angeles called Bytes for Bullets. And it was all about trying to make a transition from people who were engaged in violence in Los Angeles to try and take them down the road of this emerging IT. And it's really interesting when you look at our articles, because it has really dated language from the 30s, or from 30 years ago, sorry, around IT and how we would try and do it. And basically, I started out doing youth work in the north. I was always aware of Bytes and always aware of what they were doing. And especially around 20 years ago, it was all around having different, almost like IT hubs across the 10 or 15 areas where there was high levels of social economic deprivation, where people could come and simply get access to a computer. And if you look back when we started, one of the most interesting things that the guys who went to Los Angeles did was Bytes' first grant was from Apple. So our logo is an Apple. And 30 years ago, it was, if you remember the old Apple Macs, the small ones with the wee 9-inch screens, it's like your car when you're doing your sat nav. Those little screens with those little colors to it. If you go to our website, bytes.org, you will see our new logo. We've tried to incorporate that back in. So when you ask me about the kind of waves of digital ICT and digital kind of inclusion, if you like, Bytes has gone through journeys of it being really high on the agenda, but we've also gone through phases where it's been really low. And that's probably to do with strategic focus of in Northern Ireland, the executive or, the kind of key infrastructure. So it's kind of ebbed and flowed. And I definitely think we're in this, even in this conversation, I think we might be in a time where we're actually looking at this as a significant issue post-COVID. And I'm sure we'll get into talking about that and the effects on young people. But that's a little bit about Bytes, a little bit where we've come from and a little bit about the last 30 years.
Fantastic. Steph, you are also working here in Northern Ireland. Have you seen that same wave? Are you on a wave at the moment, especially with the new project?
Yeah, and again, thank you so much for inviting me today. Much like Stephen, we have worked on the Go On NI project. This is our 10th year. And when we initially started that project, our target audience was always older people in rural areas. We initially were out in community centres or church halls or anywhere where we had a roof over our head and had a table. And I would have like 15 or 20 laptops and ticking them in, setting them up with like Wi-Fi dongles and stuff. So, you know, we were trying to bring everything to the people and to places where they felt comfortable learning. But we did kind of go through a bit of transition, and the courses evolved. It was initially accredited courses that we were teaching the people, but when we listened to the participants themselves and the feedback from them, the course was very rigid and very structured. So we completely changed the whole process, and we started offering more bespoke sessions and listening to what the people want and what they want to get out of it. Some people were not interested in word processing at all, but they were interested in learning how to Skype their family and friends who maybe lived far away and they never got to see them. So that is kind of where we're at. And the training itself is mostly on smart devices like phones or iPads or Android devices, and it's very bespoke to each class. So never like one session, even if it is about Facebook or Twitter, you're always pulled in another direction usually in that session. But it's that flexibility that I think supporting communities are very good at. We kind of just roll with it, and you can never predict what we're going to teach people, and they get what they get out of that. The classes are quite informal. They are, you know, they're a bit of crack, a bit of laugh during it. It's not all digital. You know, we don't force that down their throat. We want them to enjoy it. We want them to have conversations. We want them to have that social aspect as well. So I think that's something that we have done really successfully. Obviously, the pandemic was a huge turning point for us, because we were in the community. We were on the ground with the people in the room, sitting right next to them, helping them through it. But how do you remotely train people on digital inclusion who don't have digital skills? So when the pandemic hit, it was a lot of phone calls and a lot of time one-to-one just explaining what Zoom is, trying to talk people through that process. And then thankfully people have been so amazing and adaptable, and our stats, we tripled the amount of people we would have trained pre-pandemic compared to post-pandemic. It was amazing, and it just shows people's willingness to learn. And I think some people that might not have wanted to go on a digital journey were nearly forced on that, and that's the only kind of positive thing I can say that came out of pandemic. But yep, it's amazing, and I think the difference that you can make to getting people online, as I'm sure the same as Stephen, it's brilliant. You know, the opportunities that you give them, both educational and social.
So Tracy, we might come to you next. And as Steph was talking about the social and educational aspects of her work, I think your work with Grow Remote is also about giving people economic opportunities. Do you want to talk us through the evolution of Grow Remote and what you're doing now?
Yeah, so we started when I was a community manager for Bank of Ireland, and I was setting up their co-working spaces and technology incubators. And at the time, there was a big growth of co-working spaces in Ireland. There's about now in the Republic of Ireland, there's now about 400 across Ireland that are funded by these government schemes. And when I went in, I met people who were community development people. So the types of people who run the market, the farmers markets, the GAA team, the digital hub, whatever needs to be done, they find a way to do it. And in summary of a lot, because I was working all over the country at that point, hubs weren't solving the problem that we needed them to solve, which was lack of jobs in our communities. And from my perspective, if we can get jobs into communities, it's taking a first principles approach to community development. If we can have people working, spending their time and their money in their communities, then they're much more self-equipped to be able to solve for their own challenges and self-organize and all of that kind of stuff. So when we began to look at jobs, again, to skip to the end, there are now 80,000 jobs available in any rural community across Ireland, anywhere, in fact, mostly across the EU. And that number is growing at a rate of 5-7%. So the question that we asked ourselves when we started this, and we were just 10 of us in a WhatsApp group, was, how come we didn't know about these jobs? And we don't know about these jobs in our rural communities or regional communities because nobody gets paid to tell us. And that is the problem. There's no local model for location agnostic work. So we step in and we educate people. And it's important to note on a final part to this piece that remote work shifted about 2 years ago from freelance and entrepreneurship into employment. So you can now be employed in a rural community in wherever, and you can have all of the same perks that you get in a city centre career. You're just based in the regions. And so yesterday was International Women's Day. And we work to no longer have gender as a bias in your employment opportunities. And so my question would be, how come location can be a factor in where you can be employed? It should no longer be. And that's the work that we set out to achieve.
Great, amazing. So I'm wondering, when we do find ourselves, you know, in a world that, as Steph talked about, that woke up to digital in an even more accelerated way, and Stephen, you talked about it being sometimes directed by policy or attention, like, how do you think it's going to play a part in COVID recovery or the rural sustainability or inclusion of women, like any of the interlinked issues with digital inclusion?
I was thinking, that's very interesting, Tracy, that kind of talent that is in the cities, if you could relocate to the regions, it wouldn't have any effect on your career, and that pathway is pretty interesting as a way of thinking. Because in the north, obviously the OECD skill strategy was just kind of completed there just before the pandemic hit. And in the north, I don't know if it's a slightly different picture, I'll work it out as I say the words out loud, but the idea being that in Northern Ireland we have got two things slightly misaligned. One is that we've got an imbalance of our skills imbalance, where we've got this emerging creative industries, we've got a kind of an emerging need for IT skills, and we don't have enough people in those spaces. I think I was working with our colleagues in Belfast Met recently, it was one of our partners, and we were talking like, for every seven jobs goes out in the north, there's only like one person that can apply for it because they've got that level of digital skill. And the other side of it is around all these, so that's that kind of misalignment of kind of that skills. But the other side of it is our career services in Northern North aren't talking enough about where opportunities lie. And for me, it seems to be a little bit more around the pipeline is the language that's in all the kind of policies and all the kind of stuff that I'm looking at. The digital pipeline, particularly for young people who are furthest from those opportunities. So we've got in the Titanic Quarter around Belfast, you know, an amazing emerging digital kind of creative skills, digital skills, and all that's emerging. And within like a mile of that, you've got like the markets of Inner East Belfast. You know, within 2 miles of that, you've got some of the most, you know, deprived areas in Northern Ireland around North and West Belfast. And it's a wee bit along the line of, not totally along the line, Tracy, what you're saying, but what my feeling is that there's no one telling young people what those jobs are like. And the idea is that they're, and especially in some of the research, and again, back to what's coming out from the skills strategy from Northern Ireland, we're not looking for degree educated tech kind of people, expertise in digital skills. We're looking for level 3, 4, and 5. That's very achievable to you for young people, particularly if you're 17, 18, thinking about a job. But I like what you said there, Tracy, because there's no one telling them. There's no one helping them to access that information and get that feel. That's my review on that.
I just coming from, I suppose, my point of view, obviously I work with older people in rural areas. And when Tracy, you're chatting about, you know, people living in rural areas shouldn't be deprived of jobs or of anything digitally, but I do think the infrastructure has played a huge part, like within Northern Ireland, with their capability to even like host a Zoom call or continue their business online or continue anything online with that like lack of internet and or just the very, very limited or slow broadband speed. So obviously with the Project Stratum being rolled out at the minute, it's having a massive, massive impact. And I can see it at first hand as well from even my classes, people saying we could never have joined this. We would never had the broadband strength for 5 of us to be on here at the same time or 10 of us to be on here at the same time. So I think it comes hand in hand with you rural areas having that infrastructure, having the skills to get online. From our point of view, that is where we've launched the new project with the department of Agriculture. They have funded tablet devices, and they funded ourselves to train people up. So the people now have got the infrastructure, because we're trying to come on the back of Fibris and the superfast broadband being rolled out in some areas. So we're trying then to help the people in those areas have the skills, confidence, and also the equipment to get online. So there would be no point in having the infrastructure and people not being able to use that. I know that's not obviously completely aligned with what Tracy had said, but that is kind of where we're coming from in the rural aspect of digital training.
Yeah, and Tracy, that connectivity issue is something that everybody has talked about a great deal. What have you been finding? Because I know that people in Valencia Island that are, you know, all the way on the other end of the island, connecting. How is that playing out for people's job prospects?
Yeah, in general, I think the narrative, I really need to have a scripted answer to this question, because I get a little bit too passionate about it. In general, the narrative around rural Ireland and broadband is doing us more harm than good for a couple of reasons. One is people think we have no broadband. A recruiter asked me one time, where are the people living around you, like where I'm from in Kinvara, which is in the Burn, where are they working? And I was like, but you don't have the internet. And I was like, how do you think I'm talking to you? We have the internet. You know, there's a real challenge there. And then second of all, after you have the internet, it's not a silver bullet. So Tuam, you know, had a digital hub and the internet and all that, a town in Ireland. And they were one of the only towns in Ireland to increase their unemployment rate at a time where everyone else was going in the other direction. You know, so it isn't the silver bullet for things. So connectivity is one piece. But the last person that we got employed was a 64-year-old lady in rural Laois. We can solve an awful lot of these problems, but we need to be working, you know, on a few pieces at the same time. So digital hubs are a good stopgap for issues around if you can't get connectivity into your home. We also know in cases where people are working for the likes of eBay that they're using other people's homes. It's not ideal, but there is a workaround. And again, if we can get people employed and they're able to work and live and participate in all of that, then they're armed better for the future, you know, instead of waiting. Certainly in Ireland, I feel there's a big narrative, well, we'll wait until the broadband's done. And sure, and then they give out about, it's only giving out and waiting. And there's so much that we can be doing in the meantime. So I definitely agree. I mean, Stephanie, you did just say around, you know, as soon as that was being provided for, you were straight in with the skills. And it's that layering. So infrastructure, good. Broadband and hubs, good. If we can layer on top of that digital skills and jobs, then we're away with it. But we need to work with all three.
Yeah, I think the what we find is that, you know, people have been given a device maybe for Christmas or birthdays, or it's maybe been a child or grandchild and they've just been handed it and thinking, yep, there you go, like you get on with it. But, you know, obviously, even if it was a brand new device, there's no instructions with it. And a lot of people that we would connect with, they are rural, they are elderly, they have maybe nobody living at home anymore, so there's no support. And they're obviously, it's just very difficult to get that support. And we are obviously trying our best to help people, but I'm the only person funded in my post in supporting communities to do that specific role. So it does take a lot of time. And, you know, people are like, no, I'm too old for this. And that question, I pushed that question right away, because, you know, the oldest person we had was 99. He was amazing. He was flying through stuff, emailed all the time, and he was so good. But you know, so their age is absolutely not a barrier. I don't even accept that as a barrier to people. Like, once they say they're too old, I find something that they are passionate about or that they have a real interest in, and then I list like my hook, and then I get them in, and then I'm like, you're not old. Look, you've just done this. And I feel like older people in Ireland are very sore in themselves as well. They don't see how good they are at stuff, and they're like, no, I'm not good enough, and they just don't have that confidence. But I suppose that's what we're just trying to do. Even if we can just help them with one of those things, then hopefully it snowballs.
So it's really, I mean, even just thinking about what you've described there, particularly in rural communities and then with older people, and there's something around younger people that I think it could be helpful in this, because obviously the structure of the research around digital divide, kind of, there is a bit there where it talks about access, which is what you're saying, Steph, around, or sorry, Tracy, around the hubs and the places, and there's a place for skills. But for young people, I actually think one of the big parts of this is the first level that all the research talks about, we skip over it all the time, policymakers particularly, motivation, particularly the motivation to want to get digital skills. It has to be first on the list. And to do that, a lot of the focus we have in Bytes, I'll tell you about that in a wee minute, but the reason why I think that's vital, motivation, is because Ofcom do every year like a digital lives of young people survey, and the one in 2020 and 21 are fascinating reads because of COVID. The stories in that of two of the young people that was part of their kind of, it's a quantitative analysis, but it's a qualitative analysis, sorry, but it's really excellent. Two young people, 26 hours a week on Snapchat was part of their storytelling. That's just Snapchat. And then they talk about the influencers on YouTube. They talk about the role of TikTok in their lives. And that releases such fun for young people, such a laugh, things you can enjoy, things you can access. But the reason why I want to go back to motivation on this is because the motivation for young people is consumption. And it has to be, nothing wrong with that, because we all do it. But it's something around, we have to be careful that the digital focus we have for young people allows them to think about, how are you going to create content like that? How are you going to create content like that? How are you going to pick up those digital skills? And then the other thing, obviously, from research is talking about, our focus tends to be when we are doing these programs. And I see it again, I'm going to hit the policy thing because I'm sure policymakers may listen to this. That sometimes when you're doing these things, it tends to be in the economic sphere. It's about getting skills, and that's the purpose of it. And it's no wider than that. But the research talks about, it's more likely if you learn these skills in an individual or a social context, you will transfer them into the economic field. Doesn't happen the other way. And I think there's a real opportunity because there's so much engagement from young people. You can tell me a little bit more about your context, but definitely we see it from young people. There's an interest. They love it. But we're not actually then getting them to think about the next level, which is taking it from motivation into the spaces of using the skills, using the iPad you got for Christmas, using it creatively, developing skills, and then it becomes about outcomes, which obviously becomes self-sustaining then. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah, you seem to kind of, one of the things I'm kind of hearing across all of this is the role of partnership, that you know, that all of you in some way have said this is, it's not a single issue thing. It's not a one, you know, like it's all, and I'm wondering, where have you found the partners that are making the work happen in the way that you're hoping it, whether it's to include the young people, the older people, or to, you know, make that leap from broadband isn't the silver bullet?
I might come in on that just because if we're talking about things that work in some places that could be shareable or scalable. So in general, we found brilliant partners from the IDA to Solace to the Department of Enterprise to we now partner with the world's largest remote employers, all of that kind of stuff. And that's all very mission driven and people understand it and they want to come in behind it. But just as you were saying there, Stephanie, that you're the only one person, you know, hired to do this. That was my problem at the start of Grow Remote. It wasn't my job. I started this other thing. And so it was a little bit more complicated. I didn't have the time or resources to be able to deliver what people were asking me for. So we went to a platform called ChangeX. They're an Irish organization. I'm not sure if you've heard of them. They're a nonprofit. And what they do is take ideas that work in one community and scale them to multiple communities. So we put everything that we knew about remote work and building local communities, whether people are going, that's a great point that you just made there around when people meet in some other way, a bit like John Avoy, our general manager, who set up Men's Sheds. You know, the impact is mental health, but the activity is fixing a bike or a tractor, you know, and a lot more happens around that. And so we put everything that we knew around change around remote work into a box and community development, educate one volunteer in their local community, and they in turn educate their local communities. And that has worked really well for us. That's how we got into 144 local communities across 17 countries. Now, it is a bit hard to kind of operationalize and manage and make sure that impact is being driven everywhere. But it's a brilliant tool for if you know what some elements of what you do very well that you can explain them to others in a 10-step guide, then you can empower other people to make that change in their local communities. And that can be really valuable for the person who does it, who undertakes that activity, and for the person who receives the benefit of it.
It's really valuable. We did have digital champions. For years we had trained digital champions. So then they took the learning out into the community if they were maybe a volunteer in the local community centre. But we did find it that nearly had a lifespan, but maybe it's something that I could come back, because I felt like we were getting the same people as nearly every community organization. I feel like you get the same people undertaking this multiple roles, and then they get burnt out, or in my case they just didn't have the capacity to take on any more work. So it did, unfortunately, the digital champions kind of did go to the wayside a bit, but it is something that it will be brilliant to bring back again if that's possible. Obviously, now is the time, if we can get out and about in the communities again, that we're not always putting people at risk. But it is that kind of, I don't know if people, they usually don't look at me like formal or teacher, but I do think if someone is maybe more on their level or more in around their age, and then they find it a bit more casual, you know, a bit of a chat or that sort of way. But yeah, that would be something that hopefully we can bring back again. It's just, it's getting people and not taking advantage of them either. Obviously they're good nature, or, you know, and maybe I don't think I ever did that, but and partnership, obviously it is just myself, funded by the Department of Finance for the Go On NI project, but I am the person who is partnership in the brain. If I go to a meeting and I think, well, you can help me or you can help me, I am on it. So I have worked with so many partners in the back and have a really good relationship with Ulster Bank and Danske Bank, and they would help us with scam aware sessions. Same as the NI Cybersecurity Centre, they have helped us loads recently. So I am the only one employed, but I do pull on other people's expertise in areas where I find that they deliver a better service than I would. But I'm quite lucky in that aspect. People do help me out at different times, but it's not obviously guaranteed, and they're not employed to specifically do that for supporting communities. But I think we've built up quite a good relationship with different partners that they are very helpful.
It's funny, even when we've been doing a lot in the last, especially in the last 6 months in Bytes, we've only really opened up the opportunity for people to be members of our organization. And one of the most and that's to do with many things in terms of the youth work stuff we do, young people's voice. There's lots of other elements of our work, but in this element of digital inclusion, the first point that we have, especially we're talking about partnerships in the third sector and reaching out, is actually doing digital audits with those organizations who've had laptops that are 5 years old, which isn't bad, but it's not good if you're going to have really good communication and you're not updating your devices and you don't know anybody telling you. That's actually an important thing to do. At that most basic of level, that's actually really, really important. Yeah. And we sort of frame that in the idea of, through our membership network, as well as our own work, we're trying to create really positive digital environments. So connectivity is good, but also the devices are good. Also the skills of the staff who are in those places are of at least of a level that you can get a basic introduction to it, because one of the really important partners for Bytes is actually, I feel it is going to be our colleges across the north, because we can't replicate the phenomenal work and accredited programs that they do. But go back to what I said earlier on in the research, if it talks about motivation, well, we can do that, but we need our partners across the third sector, particularly in the north, to really take on getting better at the devices, the hardware, you know, pushing for better connectivity, and then trying to make sure their staff can do the training, like you said, Steph. But for me, it's actually more young people take on high quality programs and by osmosis get these skills, and they're just sharing them. So I do have one example that's in my mind, so I'm going to say it now while it's fresh in my head, because I'd phoned, before I'd come on the call during the week there, I'd kind of made a call to a youth centre in Newry called the Magnet Young Adult Centre. The reason why I wanted to ask them could say this on this podcast is because I think they're doing this where young people are learning by osmosis. So every fortnight they have a live music, but in the sound studio, and when they're live streaming it, it's a wee small team of young people they're about 18, 19, 20. And then they're bringing kids in here 14, 13, 14, 15 to learn by doing, and it's fun. And they're not doing a course, like you said earlier on, like an accredited program stuff. They're just learning because they can. It, for us at Bytes, a big focus for us is those digital environments, not just the equipment, not just the skills, but the whole ecosystem in which young people deliver or get their services delivered in are much more focused on digital kind of methodologies, if you like.
One of the things
they probably don't even realize that they're learning as much as you know, when they are in the background, they're probably thinking this is fun, or you know, it's very casual environment, but the skills that they're learning is amazing.
It is phenomenal.
So one of the things I'm wondering, as I'm, it's part of what we've been engaging with on the podcast, is the three of you hadn't met each other before, I don't think, before coming on the podcast. So I have a curiosity about what the, given the different challenges, but also what you're really all tapping into and have been doing, is the opportunities in this space. Do you think there are things we would do better if we were collaborating with partners on an all-island basis in Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland? And maybe to ask Tracy, you know, and Steph and Stephen specifically, like the three of you having this conversation, are you hearing things that would give value added to your work if there was an all-island approach to the kinds of spaces you're trying to work on, or even just in the third sector, collaborating more with partners in both jurisdictions?
Go ahead, Tracy.
I was going to answer first. I was like, I think there's always value in partnership. Like always, people bring different elements. You know, when it comes to ourselves, I think it's not duplicating work. It's not duplicating resources. It's not duplicating funding. So if we got funding for a project and X, Y, and Z got funding for that project, I would rather amalgamate or try and help each other out rather than maybe making the project just that bit better and that bit more inclusive or reaching more people. We as supporting communities we work a lot with community groups at a grassroots level, so we do have that reach, but there would be groups that we wouldn't have the reach and don't have that kind of, you know, door open for us. But the likes of Tracy, like it would be in both of ours, I think, advantage if there was a cross-border project, if that ever came about. It's, I think, for ourselves, it's always good to know people in the digital realm or who is doing what. And then with Stephen, I feel like I could be like, give me some of your young people, please let them log into our calls. Like, do they know about like download apps? Do they like, can they do this? Can they do that? Like, it would just, I just think for ourselves, it brings so much to my project. And again, obviously for resource wise, it helps me a lot as well.
I'll just go in the background, because I'm actually something that Tracy had talked earlier on about hubs. And there are some in the north, but I have to say that they're probably more, and if somebody will probably email me if I say this after, like, but I'm going to say it anyway, but I think they tend to be more in the cities or the big population centres. And I think that idea of hubs, particularly in the north, there are around 100 voluntary youth organisations, you know, that's not including uniform, that's like places purposely built, set up for young people. And if they were actually more effectively, I'd love to know more about that hub connection, because I think that there's a way of those hubs being more accessible to the wider community as well, if it was set up strategically. It's a big strategic gap, not having places that are really high quality, like we're describing, and could be maintained and developed in an appropriate way. And a bit about partnerships for me that got into that. Like, so for Bytes, what we have done, like we have there's not very many organizations doing this type of work in the north. I've really dug hard into this and looked across, and most of the ones that do, we've got a memo of understanding with them that we will work collaboratively. No one created us, no one created the context for that to happen. That happened because of spending time talking to people, realizing where they were coming from and going, right, we will work together. So within Bytes, we don't actually try and replicate what other people do. We try and work together. So they enhance our work and we enhance their work. That's how we've kind of done it. And there's a couple of organizations, like I've already talked about Magnet, but There's an organization, Giga Training, who do a lot of work around this. The OES Center in Belfast do a lot of music based work, and we're trying to work on partnership around that. So there's loads of really good opportunities there. But I think in the north, this may be an all island kind of thing, because if we're doing this type of work to develop motivation of young people to get involved in IT, if we're doing that in Strabane, the better offer might be in Lifford. You know, if we're doing that in Armagh, the better offer might be somewhere around Monaghan. But those links between the colleges, I think, are there. But the colleges are not, I don't know, in the south, like, but definitely in the north, there's a desire to work with the third sector, but it hasn't been put in place in a strategic level. And I think strategically, there should be something looked in that area, because the colleges are fantastic in this space. But it's back to my point, what I think our value contribution is to this area of work is motivation, giving opportunity and showing people the way, and then people go on and take things on for themselves.
Yeah. Tracy, do you want to?
Yeah, I'll give you a broad answer to the question. So you asked around challenges as well, and maybe challenges that we're having, right? So just tell you my number one challenge, because I'm telling it to anybody who listen. There is no supports for social enterprises to scale up. So all the supports for social enterprises are 10 grand here, 20 grand there, you know, 80 grand here. I come from this startup tech community, and it's treated completely different, particularly in the Republic. Your funding generally comes from the government, and then they're like, well, you have to spend taxpayers' money here. But if you're a startup, they'll give you taxpayers' money too, and they'll say, make sure you go abroad, because if you don't go abroad, you're not going to remain competitive. And the mindset is completely different. So there are no supports for supporting organizations to scale, like ours to scale. And we will do it, but it's a lot harder for us than it could be. And a slight digression on that one then. We were over in Lisbon a couple of weeks ago meeting some impact investors, and I was ready for them. And they said, oh, no, we don't invest in nonprofits. And I thought, so a for-profit could come in here with like a nice marketing line and get money that, and I could do actually good work with it. And that really shocked me in terms of, are we doing the right thing here? But so that's scaling. Next is when I was still in community development, which technically I am now, but I was more out with other people pre-COVID when I was in Bank of Ireland. The number one challenge they brought up was knowing where to find funding. So Western Development Commission did a piece of work with all the councils, all the community groups, everybody. And they said, we've got 1 million euro. What do you want us to do with it? Is it hubs? Is it a fund? What is it? And they said, tell us where to find the money. This is such a noisy, chaotic space. And I think there needs to be more supports there. And then third on this, I guess, internationally, there's an up and coming sector for community managers that's generally coming out of CMX, Community Manager Global, or Community Club. And these are people trained up in the skill of community management. And I feel like working in the community space and with volunteers, you burn out because your work isn't, and not only maybe is your work not valued, it's like, oh, and why didn't you do more there actually when you were volunteering on your Saturday evening between 6 to 8 and you didn't cook your own dinner? Why, you should have done, you didn't pick up that piece of litter. And it's really, really difficult. And even having an outlet to speak with other people. I remember I had an idea, and I'll finish on this, of the curious case of Community C. Right. So we wouldn't name even the person or the community they were talking about. We would let them air kind of how their journey has really went and the challenges that come along when you're, you know, sitting up in a local county council meeting and some councillor is giving out about the work that you're doing. And you're like, what am I doing this for? You need support at that exact time, and you need support from people who are longer in the sector than you are, or maybe very, very new and still have a load of energy. Some different side of you anyway. And so I think there's a huge amount of supports that need to be put in place for, as long as we're helping people help themselves, we're on the right track. And the better we can do that, the better it will be for everybody.
And specifically, Tracy, before I go back to Stephen, you know, sorry, you can get in there a sec, but just, do you see that all-island piece, Tracy, in your future of collaboration, or is there something that you're listening to today that makes you think there might be something there?
Yeah, so the problem with Ireland that I've seen when I was in Brussels for a while trying to look into setting up there and lots of other countries, and it was really difficult because Ireland's very, very small. I was in the Dáil Bar in Leinster having a pint last week, and all the ministers are there. Like, there's no way in any other country that you'd be just it's so, so small. And then you form partnership with who's in your circle is really, I think, how it kind of naturally evolves organically. If we can extend that in any way, of course we would. I think there's, it's just, say for us growing up, we didn't consider it because you're just focusing on staying alive, right? And then as you, so that's why I guess even podcasts like this or programs like this, where all you need is an introduction. Ah, they're doing that. Cool. I know how we could help or how they could help us. And it's a very simple thing that is just, can be facilitated by an introduction. Yeah. So it definitely will be a part of us. I mean, even when you look at the map of us, there's very little in the north. But we didn't go out to grow any particular sector. People just sign up. So, but again, that's probably because we're not active there, and so you don't drive activity there. And so, you know, it goes around in a circle. If that's not really a straight answer to your question.
I think even from the north perspective, the digital inclusion agenda or anything around it is fragmented across a couple of different government departments. Agricultural, economy, and education kind of have different leads in different ways. But none of them, I don't think it's deliberate, like it's not deliberate, but none of them have a focus on the third sector being a key strategic partner in all of this. So therefore, back to kind of the point there, Tracy, in the north, it does the funding with, or the structural funding would follow that strategy. If there's no strategy, there will be no money. And I think that would be quite interesting to look at what's existing across the south. What do we want in the north? And could it be conceptualized on an all-island kind of a approach, you know, even though obviously it's two jurisdictions, but one common approach to how we develop those digital skills? That to me would be a really interesting, it would be worthwhile. It would be worthwhile, actually.
Yeah, that would have a massive impact across all sectors. And it obviously that, like as process of osmosis, as you said earlier, it would feed itself through different communities, different people, different age groups. If we had something more structured from a higher level, I suppose.
So folks, we've had an amazing conversation. It hasn't felt like a long one, but actually we're getting close to finishing up. So I'm just wondering, is there any last thing that you think, those opportunities, those barriers, is there anything that you, yeah, that the conversation's brought up that might leave you thinking about, or opportunities that you might be wanting to explore after this conversation? Anything?
Just mainly one of the barriers for ourselves is funding, and it's funding off another person. If we could have two or three of me, the impact that would have, like right across Northern Ireland, would be amazing. And it would reduce the digital divide, because we are, like Northern Ireland specifically, we are the we have the lowest digital uptake in the UK. So we've got the highest number of people who are digitally excluded. So we're always trying to reduce that number. And obviously it's difficult when everything is, like different government departments have different agendas and trying to get them to buy in. But obviously we're very thankful of the Department of Finance and of DERA, of their funding and their approach to digital. But we need more people to buy in, and it's just more funding, honestly. It's getting more people and to help those on the ground.
You need to go back to Ulster Bank and Deutsche Bank after the next event and say, thanks a million for your help, and only give me 100 grand.
I'll have a pep talk with you after this.
Yeah, no, honestly, ask people for money. Ask them. Whoever you meet, ask
them. And, what's your name? How much have you got?
Yes, exactly.
I know that we are working on a strategy within supporting communities that is a bit more structured and trying to approach that sort of funding side of things, but people aren't that willing, honestly, aren't that willing to give it out right now. But hopefully if we meet in 5 years' time, hopefully that'll be a good sign that there'll be multiple people on this call.
I think from my side of things, the Children and Young People Commission in Northern Ireland put a report out just 2 years ago, and it was really, really clear. COVID has highlighted young people are, I know many people are disadvantaged, but young people are a particular disadvantage when it comes to digital exclusion, and because of these areas, there's a high level of mistrust in their normal life. So in the digital life, it's even higher because you don't know always who's lying behind things. So we need these young people to really understand that the digital world is welcoming to them, and we need better spaces. And you talked earlier on about, I could literally talk for about an hour on this now because it's getting under my skin, because I've only come into this area of work in the last year and a year and a half from what I've been doing for years before. And you look at this and going, the young people really need us to get our, in the north, and that's in across the whole island, but definitely in the north, they're so far left behind and they can't access what they need. They don't even have the motivation. So what the heck do we expect them to get these jobs? We need to give them a bit of a leg up.
Okay, folks. Well, look, it's been really interesting listening to you, and I hope that you do connect and you do have those other conversations. And if there's things that this podcast stimulates in that way, it's doing part of what we hoped, which is opening those conversations. So thanks, everybody, for attending today. And that's us.
You have been listening to Across Divides. Learn more about today's topic and find opportunities to get involved at icommunityhub.org. iCommunity is a joint initiative of The Wheel and NICFA and is supported by the Northern Ireland Department for Communities, the Department of Foreign Affairs Reconciliation Fund, and the Shared Island Unit in the Department of the Taoiseach.